VOA's Joe Ramsey with this worldwide news update. Egypt announced Sunday an emergency Arab summit in response to U.S. President Donald Trump's Gaza plan. AP correspondent Donna Warder reports.
Egypt says it's hosting an emergency summit on February 27th to discuss what it calls new and dangerous developments after President Trump proposed resettling Palestinians from the Gaza Strip and rebuilding it into the, quote, Riviera of the Middle East, end quote. Trump made the suggestion at a White House meeting with Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu last week, and it not only infuriated the Arab world, but stunned American allies and other global powers. Netanyahu called Trump's suggestion remarkable and the first good idea that he had heard. Egypt's foreign ministry says it's hosting the Arab League summit in Cairo, following talks at the highest level in Arab countries in recent days. I'm Donna Warder.
Top Trump administration officials are openly questioning the judiciary's authority to serve as a check on executive power as the new president's sweeping agenda faces growing pushback from the courts. Officials ranging from billionaire Elon Musk to Vice President J.D. Vance have criticized a federal judge's decision early Saturday that blocks Musk's Department of Government Efficiency from accessing Treasury Department records that contain sensitive personal data. Judges have also blocked Trump, at least temporarily, from moving forward with mass federal buyouts, from placing thousands of USAID workers on leave, and from implementing an executive order that seeks to end birthright citizenship for anyone born in the U.S. This is VOA News. The presidents of Ukraine and the United States are looking to make a deal. VOA's Arash Arvasati has more.
Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky shows reporters a once classified map pinpointing the location of his country's rare earth and other critical minerals.
These deposits are priceless, huge amounts of money, huge. That's why we need to protect them. So if we're talking about a deal, that's what the Americans want. So let's do a deal.
President Trump says he's open to negotiations.
So we're looking to do a deal with Ukraine where they're going to secure what we're giving them with their rare earth and other things.
Rare earth minerals are important for the manufacture of electric motors and consumer electronics. World leaders will meet this week at the Munich Security Conference in Germany to discuss, among other subjects, support for Ukraine. The talks run from February 14th through the 16th. Arash Arvasati, VOA News.
President Trump's offer to take in white South Africans as refugees fleeing persecution may not spur quite the rush he anticipated, Reuters correspondent Zachary Goldman reports.
An executive order Trump signed on Friday provided for resettlement in the U.S. of, quote, Afrikaners in South Africa who are victims of unjust racial discrimination as refugees. Afrikaners are mostly white South African descendants of Dutch and French settlers, some tracing back their roots in the country to the 17th century. But it's not clear they want to flee the place they've called home for hundreds of years.
Why would you want to go? There hasn't been any really bad taking over of land. The people are carrying on like normal. And, what are you going to do over there?
That was the response from Neville van der Merwe, a white 78-year-old pensioner living in Cape Town. And he had this to say about Trump cutting off aid to his country.
We all know how Mr. Trump behaves, so... Why should they do that? Is it being spiteful?
Trump is pushing back against a law signed last month by President Cyril Ramaphosa, aimed at addressing the country's unequal land ownership. The new law makes it easier for the state to expropriate land for what it says is the public interest. Ramaphosa's governing African National Congress, or ANC, has defended the measure and accused Trump of amplifying misinformation propagated by AfriForum, an Afrikaner-led group. And even that group, which lobbied Trump's previous administration on their cause, said it was not taking up his offer.
Reuters correspondent Zachary Goldman. That wraps up this update, but the world and news never stop. For additional updates, visit our website, voanews.com. I'm Joe Ramsey, VOA News.
Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Mbatti in Washington. Today is Monday, February 10th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. African leaders call for an immediate ceasefire in eastern DRC and the resumption of the Luanda-Nairobi dialogue.
The lives of millions depend on our ability to navigate this complex and challenging situation with wisdom, clarity of mind, empathy for the millions whose lives and livelihoods have been plunged into uncertainty.
Analysts say the war in eastern DRC threatens East Africa's economy. South Sudan's peace talks in Kenya broke down again for the third time over the weekend. Environmentalists criticized the Nigerian government's plan to resume oil production in the oil-rich Niger Delta region. Namibians, Africa, and the world mourn the death of founding President Sam Nujoma.
He will be remembered as one of the freedom fighters of his generation in the 20th century, alongside Julius Nyerere, alongside Oliver Tambo.
And a Trump official responds to critics of a Gaza takeover plan as the Israel-Hamas ceasefire deal holds. Those stories plus Samson O'Malley's sports are coming up on Daybreak Africa. African leaders have called for an immediate ceasefire and the resumption of the Luanda and Nairobi dialogue between the Democratic Republic of Congo, Rwanda, and M23 rebels. The call came during the first ever EAC SADC Heads of State Summit to address the worsening crisis in eastern DRC. Moses Avriabimana reports.
The crisis in the eastern DRC is worsening after the M23 rebel group captured Goma, a key town in North Kivu province in the eastern part of Democratic Republic of Congo. This weekend, 14 African leaders from East African Community and South African Development Community met in Dar es Salaam to resolve the crisis that has persisted for more than two decades now. Kenya's President William Ruto, who is the chairman of the East African Community Heads of State Summit, called for the implementation of a lasting solution.
Our presence here underscores our consensus that the time for action is now. The lives of millions depend on our ability to navigate this complex and challenging situation with wisdom, clarity of mind, empathy for the millions whose lives and livelihoods have been plunged into uncertainty.
According to the United Nations, the number of people who have been killed in the attacks by the M23 rebel group since the capture of Goma is now close to 3,000 people. Tanzania's President Samia Suluhu Hassan is calling for an inclusive dialogue and says that the current crisis is affecting the regional trade and stability.
As regional leaders, history will judge us harshly if we remain still and watch the situation worsen day by day. And in line with the principle of African solutions for Africa's problems, our countries have a collective responsibility to ensure we urgently address the existing security challenges that have heavily impacted the well-being of innocent civilians.
The United Nations says that more than 100 female prisoners were raped and burned alive during the jailbreak in Goma, which is now controlled by M23. The Joint Regional Bloc Summit directed the resumption of the direct negotiations and dialogue with all state and non-state parties, including the M23, with whom the DRC government had declined to negotiate with last year. Dr. Nkiri Ntanda is a professor of political science at the University of Kinshasa.
What is at stake now is the fact that the DRC comes to the table very, very weak with parts of its territory occupied by the M23 that is being supported by Rwanda.
The current crisis in the eastern DRC has brought in neighboring countries like Burundi and nations as far as South Africa. With a call for the international community to intervene, hopes of the country's stability now lie on the two regional blocs and the Rwanda-Nairobi peace negotiations, which failed to bear fruits for almost 2 years now. Moses Avyarimana for Voice of America.
Analysts say Kenya and other East African countries are affected by the declining movement of goods and services to and from the Democratic Republic of Congo. The city of Goma, which is the epicenter of the war, has had its airport closed and flights suspended. Maureen Ojiambo reports.
Kenya and other neighboring countries are bearing the effects of intense violence in the Democratic Republic of Congo. The war in Goma is compromising the goal of a unified East African community with the free movement of people, goods and services. The Goma region has been living with uncertainty for the longest time now, with no solution from the East African community. Economist Ali Kamsa says the economic state of DRC and the region will solely depend on whether the current situation intensifies or de-escalates.
Although we've seen a significant escalation in the situation in the last few weeks, this has been ongoing for quite some time. So, you know, I think the economic fallout from this, the Jambojet cancelling their flights, will mean some economic slowdown.
Many countries within East Africa that depend on Congo for exports and imports are in limbo, with countries like Uganda counting losses. Such as says, the people of Goma have not benefited much from the region, which is rich in resources.
If you look at something and test it by the outcome, there's been zero outcome in terms of stabilizing that part of the world and allowing people to benefit in what is a very economically rich geographical area.
The war in DRC is a hindrance to the country's economy across all sectors. Mining has been the most affected as the country is not able to utilize its natural resources due to instability and violence. On Saturday, Kenya's President William Ruto, in a meeting in Dar es Salaam, Tanzania, said the DRC is in a crisis and the area requires an immediate solution.
It is clear that the conflict in DRC is complex, delicate, protracted, and involves multiple actors pursuing different interests. The issues at stake span a wide historical, economic, and political spectrum, run back in time for many decades, and spill across national and regional borders. There is also a clandestine international dimension at work whose persistent, cynical, and destructive effects must neither be underestimated or ignored any longer.
In seeking a lasting solution, the regional leaders expressed support for resuming direct negotiations with all state and non-state parties, including the M23 and existing regional mediation frameworks. The DRC has, however, rejected any form of direct negotiations with the rebels. For VOA Africa, I am Moreno Jiambo in Nairobi.
The people of Namibia, Africa, and the world are mourning the death of Namibia's founding president, Sam Nujoma, who passed away Saturday at the age of 95. The African National Congress, the ANC, South Africa's largest political party, has lowered its flag to honor Nujoma's death. ANC National Spokesperson, Masenge Sengu, tells me that the ANC calls on Namibia to continue the fight until the total liberation of their country and the African continent.
The ANC is deeply saddened at the passing of the father of Namibian democracy, the independent Namibia, a soldier who led the people of Namibia towards their own liberation from apartheid South Africa. We remember him as one of the companions of Oliver Reginald Tambo, the longest serving president of the African National Congress. He will be remembered as one of the freedom fighters of his generation in the 20th century, alongside Julius Nyerere, alongside Oliver Tambo, alongside Samora Machel in Mozambique. A number of those freedom fighters that ensured that their countries achieved independence against colonialism. So as we commemorate his passing, we are also reminded of the role he played in the liberation of South Africa. He was awarded one of the prestigious national orders in South Africa as a result, the Order of the Companions of Oliver Tambo, some years ago, connecting him to South Africa for life.
I saw in your statement you called on Namibia and SWAPO to continue the fight for the total liberation of Namibia and Africa. Could you explain that?
Yes, we definitely said that in our statement. Namibia has recently went into an election. The president-elect will be coming, stepping into the role, being one of the first women to be president, as you know, in our continent. And we are proud of that because that is part and parcel of the gender struggle waged by these forefathers of our struggle, of our country. We believe that Sam Nujoma's strongly advocated for land justice, for people that were dispossessed from their land to be able to have restoration. And we believe that that is not fully accomplished even in Namibia, just as is the case in South Africa. And so full freedom in Namibia will only be achieved if we can address access to land so that we can enable avail land for development, for economic inclusion purposes, and for ensuring that the land is shared by all those who work it, as the South African Freedom Charter says.
The ANC is lowering its flag in honor of the late Nujoma. Is this for the whole of South Africa or just the ANC flag?
For the whole of South Africa, given the fact that it is South Africans that saw it fit to confer President Sam Nujoma with a national order. That is not done by a political organization such as the ANC, although we are a leading party in government.
Masenge Sengu is the national spokesperson of the African National Congress. She spoke with me from Johannesburg. You are listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today is Monday, February 10th. For more Africa news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms. We are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Still to come on our program, Samson O'Malley Sports. The South Sudan Peace Talks in Kenya, known as the Tumaini Initiative, broke down for the third time over the weekend. The talks between the South Sudan government and the groups considered to be peace holdouts have been going on for more than 10 months under the auspices of the Kenyan government. Pagan Amung is the leader of the United People's Alliance, a grouping of seven political parties, he tells me. And the only option left now is for South Sudanese to intensify their efforts until a sustainable peace and good governance are achieved.
The talks broke down because the government delegation decided to interrupt the discussion. We were discussing the root causes of the conflict in South Sudan and the relationship between the Tumaini consensus and the RRCs, the agreement that they failed to implement. And while we were discussing, the government abruptly informed us that they were going out of the talks, that they were returning to Juba, and that's how the talks ended. And even when we tried to reach a joint declaration, the objective to a declaration, they also could not agree with us and the mediation on a joint communique.
Could it be the government walked out because you made certain demands to be represented in the current government?
We did not discuss anything about government formation or participation in government. We were discussing the root causes of the conflict in South Sudan and how to resolve those root causes to end the persistence of conflict in our country.
What do you see as the root causes of the conflict? Because if I'm not mistaken, these issues have been in the discussion for a while now.
Well, one of the major root causes is political and leadership crisis in the country, which is resulting from leadership failure and lack of vision, loss of vision that would have guided the country towards a state and nation building in South Sudan. Then there is a persistent power struggle.
Did the government say while they were walking out of the meeting that they gave you any reason?
Well, they said that they were going back to extend themselves into power. You remember sometime in September they extended themselves in the government, and by the 22nd, that extension is what they are focused on.
Do you think the meetings in Nairobi have any more purpose left? Because they have been going on for a while now.
Well, we have been negotiating for more than 10 months, it's almost going to a year. We have actually made a lot of progress, agreed to Tumaini consensus agreement, which would have brought peace to the country. Unfortunately, the government reneged from this agreement, forcing us and the mediators to begin the talks from the beginning. And when we started to discuss those issues from the beginning, the government walked out.
What do you see as the hope now for South Sudan? Because we understand this country is supposed to be going to an election perhaps this year. What is the hope for the country?
The only way out left for the people of South Sudan is to intensify the struggle for sustainable peace and good governance in South Sudan.
Pagan Amoon is the leader of the United People's Alliance, a grouping of seven political parties in South Sudan. He was speaking with me from Nairobi, Kenya. South Sudan government officials were not immediately available for comment. Nigerian environmentalists have condemned a government plan to resume oil production in the restive oil-rich Niger Delta community of Ogoni. This after talks with community leaders collapsed, raising fears of violent protests. Lebosi Payabara is the former president of the Movement for the Survival of the Ogoni People, Monsab. He tells me that he tells viewers Chinedu Ofor that the community is moving ahead with talks despite widespread skepticism following years of broken promises by the government.
Well, at this point, there is no talk going on. The government invited the leadership and indicated interest that they want to talk with the Ogoni people. The president gave a speech in which he clearly said that he wants to engage with the Ogoni people on the basis of justice, development, and peace in the area. It is after the consultation where we've been able to get the views of our people and collect them what they want that you go back to the president or submit their report. We are now from the basis of negotiation.
What is the basis for this disagreement when talks have not begun?
I mean, close to 35 years now since 1990. People have different views and different opinions. A congress was held yesterday. The level of attendance shows that almost everybody in Ogoni is interested in what is going on. Of course, in some circumstances, I don't see anywhere on earth where everybody is always in agreement with everything. What I can tell you is that majority of the Ogoni population who were there in that meeting yesterday at least supported the whole idea that it needs for us to engage the process. So what happened at the Congress, more of the delegation coming to inform the Ogoni people that this is what happened in Abuja. We're going to commence consultation according to local government and different professional groups and youth groups, and then after that, we now get a report that we can send it back. So that was just the essence of the meeting. It was not about any decision on oil resumption.
What were the youth complaining about, actually, or some of those who you say may not be 100% on board?
For me, I don't see that we protest, because you said, as an American, before any discussion happens, or that they didn't say they don't want a discussion. All they're saying is that there will be needs for you as you move on with this process, ensure that the issue against exoneration is brought on the table. So that cannot be discussed in protest.
What do the Ogoni people want, based on all these 35 years of agitation?
There have been several attempts to engage. The Ogoni community have been open several times to engage. What has happened over time is that the government have not been committed, because they always zeroed the entire process of oil resumption. And we always said that there are things far beyond the oil resumption you need to deal with.
That's how Lebosi Payabara is the former president of the Movement for the Survival of the Ogoni People, also known as MONSAP, speaking from Port Harcourt with viewers Chinedu Ofor. U.S. National Security Advisor Mike Walls responded Sunday to critics of the Gaza takeover plan that President Donald Trump suggested last week. On the ground in the Middle East, the Israel-Hamas truce resulted in another successful hostage for prisoners exchange. Viewers Veronica Balderas Iglesias has the story.
The Israel-Hamas ceasefire deal continues to hold. Israeli troops withdrew Sunday from the Netzarim corridor that divides the Gaza Strip. and entire Palestinian families made their way back home to northern Gaza. What lies ahead for Gaza's inhabitants after the war ends, however, remains an open question. President Donald Trump has floated the idea of Gaza's population resettling in other countries and the United States taking over the Gaza Strip to rebuild it. Trump's National Security Advisor Mike Waltz responded Sunday to critics of the plan. He appeared on NBC's Meet the Press.
You can't get to post-construction. You can't make this the Paris of the Mediterranean like Beirut was back in the 70s and give these people a better life if you've got 1.8 million people living in absolute squalor in mountains and mountains and mountains of debris. For anyone, the media included, that doesn't like what he is proposing, come to us with a better plan.
Trump's plan has received support inside Israel, but the Arab world and the Palestinian leadership categorically reject it. Palestinian ambassador to the United Nations, Riyad Mansour.
We need to rebuild the Gaza Strip. The Gaza Strip is a very precious component of the land of the state of Palestine. It is part of our homeland, and we don't have a homeland other than the state of Palestine.
Meanwhile, Israelis celebrated the release of more hostages this weekend. Five Thai workers who had been held by Hamas for more than a year reunited Sunday with their loved ones. And 183 Palestinian prisoners also reclaimed their freedom as part of the deal. Talks on the second phase of the Israel-Hamas ceasefire deal could resume in Qatar as soon as this week. Veronica Valderas Iglesias, VOA News.
Now for Daybreak Africa Sports, and here is Thompson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. A very good Monday morning to you, Thompson.
Good Monday morning to you too, James. We begin the sports with netball as South African national netball team lost 55-61 to host England as the English team earned their first ever Vitality Netball Nations Cup win. The Roses, as the English team are called, had reached the final on five previous occasions since it began in 2012, but they had never won the title. Earlier in the day, Uganda won the third place playoff match, beating Malawi 50-45. In hockey news, South Africa clinched their first medal in history as they defeated Belgium 6-5 in the third place playoff of the FIH Indoor Hockey World Cup in Porek on Sunday. South Africa won two of their three pool games against Croatia and Poland and lost one against Austria to book their place in the playoffs. And on to athletics, where former Boston Half Marathon champion Brilian Jekyll made a resounding return from maternity leave to emerge victorious in the 2025 Kenyan National Cross Country Championships staged at the Eldoret Sports Club on Saturday. Jekyll, representing Kenya Prisons, delivered her win in a time of 34 minutes, 29.1 seconds. The reigning Westburger Residential 10-kilometer champion Maureen Jokuich came in second, while Commonwealth 10,000-meter silver medalist Stacey Ndiwa settled for the third position. In the male category, Daniel Simiyu of Kenya's National Police Service outpaced his competitors to win in a time of 30 minutes and 48 seconds.
Thank God for today. This is my preparation for marathon next month. I'll be heading to Seoul Marathon in Korea.
And now to boxing, where Nigeria were the top winners at the inaugural World Boxing Council WBC Africa Boxing Union Amateur Championship in Lagos, winning 10 of 11 bouts. The tournament saw 42 boxers from 8 African countries compete. Nigeria boxers dominated across all weight categories, securing impressive victories. The president of the African Boxing Union, Hossein Houchi, praised the success of the event. He noted the importance of providing young boxers international experience for future competitions like the World Boxing Championship in Mexico. In tennis, International Tennis Federation Director Dermot Sweeney believes there is abundance of talents on the continent waiting to be tapped. The game of tennis is beginning to gain some momentum in Africa, as in 2024 alone, the East African region held 27 tournaments, giving young players players the much-needed exposure and competition experience. And that does it for this Monday's edition of Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. Have a good Monday. And that is it for this Monday, February 10th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for beginning your week with us on behalf of the Daybreak Africa team. I'm James Barton in Washington, wishing that you will have a great week.